Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care with a focus on patient-centered care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we have some interesting combinations, people doing several cool food-related things. So we'll be talking with Lisa Moreno-Moyer, formerly of the corporate world, who now operates the Scout's Treats food truck and who is planning a dog treat truck, and who also has bought what she believes is the city's oldest sandwich shop, Griner's Sub Shop. We'll also talk with Chef Lucas Trinosky of the Chef's Academy about more interesting combinations, his recent win at the Taste of Elegance Pork competition at the Indiana Roof Ballroom, as well as competitive barbecue, and about the food truck he has planned to launch this spring. And we'll also hear from Slow Food Indy board member Ashley Brooks about what that organization is doing to keep pushing the local food movement forward. So stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Have I said lately how much I love the food scene in this city? Because it's true, there is so much going on, so many great people doing some pretty cool things. Chefs, restaurateurs, farmers, food artisans, all the terrific people in the not-for-profit world. But the thing is that there's been so much going on for a long time. It's just that the information on local food is easier to find now, and it's easier to share. And we all seem to be more interested in food than ever before, and we certainly seem to be talking about it more. But that doesn't mean that things haven't been happening all along. Peter's Restaurant opened in Fountain Square in 1985. The original farmer's market at the Indianapolis City Market began in 1997. In 2008, the Indy Winter Farmer's Market was launched. Still, even though there were plenty of folks excited about all those openings, the news just didn't spread as fast. In 1985, when Peter George opened his first restaurant in Fountain Square, all we had were newspaper food sections, city magazines, and maybe the occasional food feature on TV. Anyone remember Duffy's Diner? But now, when restaurateur Peter George opened his new restaurant, Tinker Street, recently, after having been out of the restaurant business for more than a decade, it was reported in newspapers, magazines, on TV, and, of course, online, which has been the game changer in getting the word out about local food and independent restaurants. There's nothing like instantly sharing your latest and greatest food find with thousands of Twitter followers and Facebook friends. Websites, blogs, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and on the web pages of print publications and TV stations, those things are what's helping drive the conversation along. So it's great that we're hearing more about the good work that people on the local food scene are doing now, but I also appreciate what a lot of people have done in the past to push the food scene forward. One story this week that really illustrates both ends of the food spectrum, the then and the now, is that of Lisa Moreno-Moyer. She operates the Scout's Treats truck and is also launching a new mobile venture, but she also recently bought a sub shop that has been in business on the south side of Indianapolis since 1969. I love that connection between the old and the new, the fact that a sandwich shop has been baking its own bread every day and serving a loyal neighborhood clientele, and that a food truck operator can come along and appreciate the beauty of such a business and give it the boost it needs, all the while keeping the fresh baked bread, sandwiches, pizza, and customer service that made it such a neighborhood favorite. So stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio for more from Lisa Moreno-Moyer and others who are both building on tradition and moving the food scene forward. Local food fans might know Lisa Moreno-Moyer as the operator for the past 3 years of the Scout's Treats truck. But recently, Lisa has taken on another business as well. She bought the city's last Griner's Sub Shop, which has operated on the South Side since 1969. And this spring, she'll be launching another mobile venture as well. I caught up with Lisa at the shop located at 2126 East Shelby Street to find out how all of the pieces came together.
Oh my gosh. It's a wonderful world at Raymond and Shelby, you know, and there's so much history here at Griner's. You know, it's been here since 1969, and from what I know, it's the oldest sub shop in Indy. And so I'm kind of calling that an institution, don't you think?
Absolutely.
I think so.
So now tell me about how you, why are you here? Why did you buy the sub shop?
Oh my. Well, do you want the, I'm going to give you the shortened version of that. If I gave you the real true story of how I got here, I'm not sure you'd believe me. So I'll just say that I was given this incredible opportunity to find out about this shop. I'm from the North Side. I'm now considering myself this new transplant South Side girl, and I love it. I totally love it. Forget it. I'll tell you the truth. The truth of the matter is life's too short to not tell you the truth. I was online dating and met somebody and didn't want to date him, but I wanted to buy a sub shop. You asked. There you go. I know. Why hide it anymore, right? It's such a great story. You know, and I always say my motto in life is everyone has a story. And if you could have told me for 1 second, this would have been, you know, 3/4 of the way through my story, I wouldn't have believed you. But it's true. And I ended up buying this place with a retiring police officer in Indianapolis. She left in January of this year, and with awards. She was very highly merited and recognized in her field, and she's going to do just the same here at Griner's, the sub shop.
Now, people might know you because of Scout's Treats truck, so that's what they're thinking right when they think of you, right? And not a sub shop, so that's kind of an interesting story, like you said.
Yeah, well, it is, and the fact of the matter is that I am still Scout's. You know, and there have been times I'm driving down the road, or I might be in the pink truck driving down the road, and I just start laughing like, what? How did I get here? I'm in a pink truck? What? But it's good. It's good. And here I am. I left the corporate world 13 years ago now, and then some change. And now I have these three fun businesses, and it's kind of like my kids. If somebody were to ask me which one I love the most, I love them all, and differently, but certainly Griner's is my new true love.
Well, now tell me, so you have the Scout's Treats truck and Griner's and...
And I opened up Indy's first dog treat food truck called Bark Truck. There are, I know, it's hard to say that without laughing, but there are a few of them in the country, probably only two or three others that I know of, so that's pushing it when I say a few. But I think... I think you'll see a trend towards that. But we're looking to do something a little different with that. We're looking to be full service. And I planned on this winter, but with Griner's, that kind of set that schedule back a little bit. And as you know, when you own a small business, you need to be flexible with your timeline. And so, our goal with Bark Truck is to be full service. So you can go online late spring with us. You can go online and order your dog food, homemade dog treats, shampoo, flea medicine, whatever it is that we're selling online that we have in stock, and we will deliver it to your house. Some friendly chap will poop scoop your yard and be done with it. So there you go.
No, so when is that starting, or has it already started?
No, it has not started. Our website will be up and running in March, and we're hoping to have that service sometime in March, maybe the beginning of April.
So you are a busy person, so you're not just making, you know, wonderful brownies and stuff like that. You're also making dog treats and now subs. So tell me, you know, the sub shop is just fascinating. Tell me a little bit about it and its history.
You know, I still continue to try to learn as much as I can about the history, and I feel like I learn a little bit more each day. I was fortunate about, I'm going to say 3 months ago, the original founder, Ray Greiner's daughter, Kim, came in to the shop. And I knew she didn't have a ton of time, but selfishly, I pinned her down for about 5 minutes at a table, and I just started asking her as many questions as I could. And I do know there were a handful of Greiners for some time, and I also understand there is still one left in Japan. How's that for some trivia? But this is the only Greiners left here in the United States. This is it. Yes. And truth be told, on October 6th, it shut down. And I came in with a new offer because it was my intention to buy it. But I came in with a new offer on October 6th. And on October 8th, Robert Bennett and I reopened the sub shop. And people thought it was closed for renovation, which is somewhat true. If you look around, I've renovated. And here we are. And business is absolutely strong. And every single person that walks through our door is just, they're like a gift to us. Everybody is just as important as the person that left and the person that's coming in behind them. And, you know, we've got this canvas here. It's a huge canvas. I don't know if anyone measured that, but years ago I saw this fabulous canvas in a design magazine, and I thought, oh my gosh, I love that. Well, the woman had her neighbors and friends and people that she loved draw their self-portrait on it, and I thought, what a great idea. So I had this canvas that my family was begging me to get rid of, and I painted over it, and I have, 200 squares, different colors, and we have people coming in, no kidding, every day that choose to on their own give us their history. Well, I've been coming since I was seven. I've been coming since I was, and these people have been coming since 1969 or the early 70s. And these are the people that we've invited to draw their self-portrait. And
how cool is that? It's neat. It's huge, and there are little faces, and people have filled in their faces.
Yes, I know. I know. I'm so excited. I'm gonna have a little push here to get the rest of it completed, to have this up on our wall permanently. It really is a tribute and kind of a thank you to them this spring.
We've been talking with Lisa Marino Moyer of Scouts Treats and Greiner's Sub Shop. Stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio for more on this unusual combination of old and new local businesses.
Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu.
We are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio with local entrepreneur Lisa Marino Moyer, who 3 years ago launched her Scouts Treats truck, taking cupcakes, brownies, and other treats to the street. More recently, she has bought Greiner's Sub Shop, a neighborhood mainstay at Shelby and Raymond Streets since 1969. And Lisa is launching a dog treats truck as well. Now, how do you get to the point of thinking about buying a sub shop from having a mobile treat truck?
You know, it's really no different than the rest of my life. When I look back, you know, I have to laugh in my daughter's class when they were all in kindergarten. You asked every child what they wanted to be, and 2 out of 3 of them said a dolphin trainer. None of us know ever where that came from. Like, where's that come from? Dolphin trainer. I don't know. But if you would have told me when I was young that I would have gone into travel, I managed travel for corporations for years. It's what I did for Indiana's largest corporations. And here I am. My family, much to their chagrin, I told them one day that my new career was going to be a cupcake truck. And they thought I had crossed over some bridge somewhere. And at the 11th hour, I actually changed it from a cupcake truck to a treat truck. I did some research and saw some on the East Coast, and I thought, you know what, that's really it's a little bit broader, and I chose to do that without regret. I mean, we do everything on this truck, and that has gone so well for the last 3.5 years. I mean, we all kicked it off those of us that have been around for 3+ years, we kicked it off with Super Bowl. And that, I mean, once you have Super Bowl, though, I mean, really, there's Gen Con and some other great events, but, you know, Super Bowl is like the Mac Daddy. It's a way to kick off your business, right? And it has just gone so well. But, you know, I saw people the first year that we were all in business through the winter, I saw fear in people's eyes with these food trucks. And I thought, you know, something, we need to rewrite our business plans if we're all afraid. We need to outsmart the winter. And in fact, we did. And we got ourselves booked with a lot of places. Instead of just showing up on a corner and waiting for people to come, we would book ourselves.
So that's how you get through the winter. You know where you're going, right? And people want you to come to certain places, and you get booked up.
Right. That, as well as really, for the most part, I love to operate like that all year long. And I like to maximize if I'm going to bring the truck out. I'd like to have it booked, and we're going to maximize our time and the people. But, yeah, during the winter, I mean, you know, clearly it's a tough time for trucks. And usually every winter, unfortunately, you know, you see it, a few trucks go down. And that's the nature of the beast in this business. This is not an easy business.
And I think people, so many people think they want to get into it, you know, but tell me a little bit about the reality of it.
You know, well, the reality of it is I'm not here to kill anyone's dream, you know, really. I'm not. You know, I had a guy one time that wanted to meet with me for lunch, and in fact I did, and he wanted to start a little peddling hot dog stand. Yeah. And he asked me what my first words of advice were, and I think I told him, they were run. I think that's what I said. I said, run as fast as you can run. No, actually, I told him, if you're going to do it, just, you know, go all the way, get yourself a truck, and you'll be able to do more events that way. And he did. And I know that for him, as well as the rest of us, you, if this is your dream, then you need to live it the smartest way that you can. And live it passionately. And I really think that's what I do with these trucks. And I just happened to inherit another truck with this brick and mortar. So I have three now, which...
Oh, my goodness.
I know. That feels a little illegal, doesn't it? Right. I know. So, but, you know, it's not... I am surrounded by really awesome people. This is not a badge of honor for me. I'm really not that special. I'm really, truly not. But... you know, I have a lot of people that have been very supportive, and really even my family has come full circle and no longer frowning upon the trucks that they saw. And, of course, Bark Truck has a 7.5-foot steel bone on the top of it. And I once was forced to pick up my daughter from school in that, as I had no other vehicle at my disposal.
So what did she think?
You mean what shade of color was she? She was in the pink family. Yeah, she wasn't happy about it. But I picked her up a quarter of a block away, so, you know. Well, I will tell you, the very first time I ever picked her up in the Scouts truck, she was mortified. You just don't do that to somebody in junior high. But then when her friend saw I had cupcakes on there.
Well, yeah, that changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, suddenly it was a different story. So, you know, people are, it's old news now, though. You know, people know that that we have these trucks, so, yeah.
So how has the treat truck business been in the last 3 years?
You know, well, it's competitive. You know, I was the first out on the streets, which, again, doesn't make me any more special, you know, but I wasn't the first brick and mortar. I just happened to be the first truck. And I just, you know, business is great. That's how business is. Yeah. But, you know, I have a very simple philosophy, and that is with any of my businesses, and that is really, really amazing food. So the best cupcake that I could ever create, and there are great cupcakes out there, but I'll put mine up to anyone's, and the best cupcake that you can make with the most amazing service and at a fair price. And, you know, at times even that's debatable with people. They may think your price is not fair. And my goal is this. I want to be around in a year, but I'm not going to Vegas. You know, that's the best way I can describe it. So, but, it's like any business. There's nothing for free. You just have to work for it, and you have to work hard, and you just need to be into it. And I will admit there were some nights that I just, and some days I just wasn't into it. But those are really few and far between. For the most part, I just can't believe I get to do this. So I've always say, like, cupcakes have changed my life. I know. And I have dear, dear friends from my business. I never would have met them if it were not for this business. You know, and I have already seen, like with Griners, it's just story after story after story. People are fabulous on every quadrant of the city. We just have the most amazing people in the city. We just so do.
Now, tell me a little bit about when you came into the shop and any kind of changes you've done. Revamped the menu or changed certain things? How is it different?
That's a really great question. You know, I think with any business, when you come in and you take an institution, I think you have to be really, really careful what you change because it's not here by accident. So I did the minimal to the max change that I really felt was needed. I did complete painting makeover, a makeover of the front, changed the order of things around that made best operational sense. Just updated like the chairs, but I kept the tables. That's my meeting you halfway. And kept every single sandwich. I actually came in thinking I was going to probably remove a few. Not one. There's not one that I could justify removing, but we have added three or four, and our soups are now homemade. They were not homemade before, and now they're homemade.
Oh, nice. I see the sign over there, you know, loaded baked potato, for example. So tell me about the soups.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the loaded baked potato is my business partner's mother's recipe, and we just sold out right now, so they're making more. So, I mean, like, we're saying homemade as in fresh. We're not,
Yeah.
So we'll have more out. But, our soups have gone really well, and we'll slowly introduce more. I know as we go into the summer months, that may not be as many, but, you know, it's people like their soup, you know. There's certain food staples that people like, whether it's pizza or soup or, you know, and we do pizza, too, for crying out loud.
So you can't take the pizza off the menu?
I can't, but I said, okay, if we're going to do this, let's look at how we're doing it, and made a few changes, and upgraded the sausage, threw a little fennel in there, and some worked on a couple of our crusts, and I have to say, okay, so I took a pizza home two nights ago, and my daughter said, she goes, oh my gosh, this is the best pizza in the world. Where did you get this? I said, are you kidding me? Where did I get this? Like, I made this. This is our pizza.
And you have teenagers, right?
Yes, I do. Look at me. I don't look like this for nothing. I have teenagers, yes. Yeah. I have two in college, but I have a freshman. Yeah, so she's, yeah, so it's her new favorite. Yeah. I can't believe we're a sub shop, and I'm just feel like I could one day be known for our pizzas. Isn't that crazy? I know.
Now, tell me about the meats and the breads and how you build the sandwiches.
Okay. You know, I have to say, if it weren't for this very, very old secret family bread recipe, you always ever hear about somebody having some secret recipe, and you're like, man, how did you get that? Well, I got it. And I bought it. So, I mean, you know, I'm really not sure I would be here without this bread recipe. I'm not sure I would have bought that. I don't know what, you know. So
you bought a bread recipe?
Well, really, Griners is about the bread. The bread is incredible. So it's baked from scratch every day.
Right here, you're making and baking bread from scratch, not buying frozen dough?
Oh, that's illegal to even say that. No. No. Every day. And as a matter of fact, Tina has been baking our bread now for 31 years. Count it, 31 years. That's right.
You have a bread baker here at the shop who's been here that long?
Yeah, 31 years. I know. And she says I'm her favorite boss. Okay, I just made that up.
We've been talking with Lisa Moreno Moyer, who owns Scouts Treats, Bark Truck, and now Griner's Sub Shop. For more information, look for her businesses on Facebook.
While the Indianapolis food community continues to grow, as we've said often here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, but not only because of new restaurants or events. The food community is also growing at the grassroots level through the work of organizations like Slow Food Indy, the local chapter of an international organization that works to promote good, clean, and fair food and advocates for sustainable agriculture. The organization also helps steer consumers toward restaurants that are committed to slow food values, and the Snail of Approval designation helps do just that. Slow Food Indy board member Ashley Brooks explains what the local group is working on and what it has planned for 2015, and just what is that Snail of Approval. Tell me kind of where Slow Food is right now in Indianapolis.
So Slow Food Indy is it's just a wonderful organization, and we're gaining a lot of momentum right now with all of our events planned for the year, and we have new board members, and so we're just really excited to roll out these new programs and see where it goes.
Now, how would you characterize the organization right now? You know, I remember, you know, when Slow Food was just getting started here in Indianapolis, and it was very much a pleasures of the table kind of group, you know, throwing elaborate dinner parties, and then the farmers kind of came into the organization, and then the sort of the grassroots activists kind of came into the organization. So how do you see it today? How would you describe it?
So it's really developing, you know, in a very organic way. Every year we kind of build on the previous years, and there's always new people that are interested in the program and the organization. And so now we're incorporating, of course, a lot of food-related events and also more things like education, book clubs, and we focus on having guest lecturers. So I think we're really trying to incorporate all the things that make up good, clean, and fair food.
So so maybe the table or the, you know, the tent, as people always say, but maybe the table has gotten bigger over the years as more different aspects of slow food have kind of joined in.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are really interested in what food is in their community and what it means to them. And so they want to explore a lot of different options, and we're just there for that as a resource for them.
Now, you mentioned some educational programs and some events that you have in the works. Could you tell me a little bit about those?
So this year, 2015, we've got cooking classes. We're doing a book club every month. We're hosting lectures with special guests, and we're facilitating some awesome parties at local eateries and bars, and also our Snail of Approval program, which I'll hopefully talk a little bit more about that.
So now that lets people know kind of what restaurants are sort of on the same page as Slow Food, right? So if you could tell me about the Snail of Approval.
Yeah, so Snail of Approval, you know, we've been doing that for a number of years now, and we're just really excited to add more restaurants to the program. Right now we have 19 total, and that was sort of revived last year. We're about to come up with a new enrollment period in April, so that'll be an open enrollment. Any restaurant can apply, and then the board will vote on May 18th, and hopefully we will expand the program to value-added products as well.
Oh, so it'd be some of our artisan-produced goods here in Indianapolis? Like, what kind of things are you anticipating?
I'm hoping places like Fermenti Artisan will be in the program, and maybe some small grocers, too, like Artigo, or Regina's new market, Wildwood Market, things like that.
So now, as far as some of the educational kind of events that you have coming up, what sort of things could people expect? You know, what sort of things will they be able to learn about, you know, in a slow food program?
So we do a lot of things like cooking classes. For example, cooking for couples, done by a couple cooks, and that'll be February 15th. We are doing a Good and Cheap program, special appearance by Leanne Brown, who wrote the book Good and Cheap, that's available online. And we do events, you know, surrounding programs like Sustainable Seafood in Indiana and where you can find sustainable seafood.
So now if someone wanted to kind of show up at a slow food event, what would they expect? What's a meeting like, or what are one of your events like?
So, anyone can attend the board meetings if they kind of want to know the structure of the organization and the things that are coming up. And we do a lot of volunteer opportunities, so you can sign up online to volunteer on farms or at special events. Or you can attend any of the events that we have listed on our website, and anything from kind of a social hour to a more educational experience.
Now, you just had a potluck annual meeting, so how was that? How did that go?
That was amazing. It was so much fun. Every year they get bigger and better. This year it was at the city market, and we did a panel of chefs and farmers and just talked about how those relationships develop, and it was really informative, and it was a lot of fun, and the food was amazing.
We've been talking with Ashley Brooks of Slow Food Indy. For more information on the group, go to slowfoodindy.com or look for it on Facebook. Well, we see a lot of food competitions in Indianapolis, everything from chef throwdowns to chili cook-offs to barbecue competitions. This past week's Taste of Elegance chef competition, sponsored by Indiana Pork, is among the city's more elaborate competitions, one in which chefs create a dish, based on pork, of course, for a panel of judges. After Chef Lucas Trinosky's riff on barbecue took first place in the Taste of Elegance, I stopped in at the Chef's Academy to hear about how the culinary instructor developed the winning dish. And we went on to talk about competitive barbecue as well.
Tell me about creating a dish for competition. Where do you start?
One, I start with what I like, and then I try to make that work. I lived in Charleston, South Carolina. I went to school at Johnson Wales down there. And then I went to Cincinnati, and then I moved back down, well, not back, but to North Carolina, Durham. And I was there 4 years, so, almost 7 years total. Barbecue, right? That's sort of what we do down there. And for this year, I said, I want to do barbecue. But it's not really a barbecue event. I do barbecue the KCBS, the competitions. I do maybe 3 or 4 a year. That's a barbecue event.
Right. So this is Taste of Elegance, right? So it's not really what you would think of. You're right, as a barbecue event.
The sophisticated pork presentations and dishes. So I'm like, well, I've got my mind set on Carolina barbecue, and I'll, which one do I like better? And I was longer. I worked at a barbecue place in Charleston, Melvin's. Crazy awesome. That's where I came across this mustard barbecue. So I love that. And then North Carolina, it's completely different. But so I love both sauces. So with this dish, I'm like, well, it's a battle of North and South, the Carolina edition. So I have both sauces on there. But then now I've got to deal with what cut of pork, because I don't want to just do the pulled pork. That's not elegant, right? There's no sophistication in that. So what I did was I started thinking of different cuts that I wanted to use. I pulled in some cheeks. I tried the cheeks. I didn't love the cheeks. Cheeks are great, but for what I was doing between the brine and the smoking, the texture was a little bit just not what I wanted. In the Kansas City barbecue competitions, there's something called the money muscle. Butt tender, you'll hear it called, but it's off the pork, the Boston butt that you make the barbecue out of. It's one single very tender muscle. I said, well, that's what I'm going to use. I know it's great already, but I'm going to elevate it.
Well, that's kind of cool. Yeah. That's a different kind of take on pulled pork. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then you just kind of fit the sides in there. They've got to be elevated as well. Last year I did kind of a New Orleans Cajun Creole dish. I had way too many pork components, which it seems impossible for a pork competition, but it was. But then actually Neil Brown, he said that I used corn, and it was legit corn, but it wasn't local, obviously, and, you know, the month. So I took that, and I said, well, I want succotash, but succotash has got corn again, and then lima beans and whatever veg are in season. So I went with a winter succotash, which I'd never made before, with rutabaga, you know, everything local, rutabaga, Brussels sprouts, turnips, parsnips, but the winter veg. And then I said, well, mac and cheese is a must. So I made Chef Tony, well, actually Chef Rosa, Nicole Taylor's. I got some rigatoni from her, and I cut it up. So I'm like, how do I elevate this mac and cheese? So this guy, he goes to the winter farmer's market. He's an Italian dude in Louisville. He's got crazy cheeses.
I know who you're talking about.
Right? Yeah, his cheese, like, he'll tell you. I've got actually a video of him saying my cheese is the best, and it's legit. It is the best. But I got some of his cheese, and I was like, well, what can I do? So I did some roasted garlic, some caramelized pearl onions, so it was, you know, switched up a little bit. And then I jammed.
But then how do you bring that all together, you know?
Yeah, the flavors that are already there, they work together. They've been doing them for years, but I just elevated it a little bit. Oh, slaw is the other thing. Slaw brings a kind of a creaminess and a coolness to the vinegar-based barbecue sauces. Both of those are pretty sharp with vinegar, so you need that sweetness. So I got some local apples, hit those on the mandolin. And then I was actually growing for this competition carrots, kale, leeks, radishes, and parsley.
You were growing that?
Yeah. So I'd have my own, you know, microgreens, but I snipped them about an hour before, so the flavor was crazy. So I mixed that with the apples. And then I did some, in South Carolina, boiled peanuts are huge. So I made some boiled peanuts, but I took them out of the shell. Then I dehydrated them overnight and then fried them, so like a crispy boiled peanut. Yeah, so it's really all that's already there. I just kind of switched it, elevated it in a smidgen.
Now, what was the response that you got from that? I mean, obviously it took first place. Were there some comments at the tasting too? Did people seem to like it?
Yeah. I don't think I said this, but there was a 3-day root beer brine. I brined it in root beer, yeah, so it was, there was a lot going on. Like, so many
clearly yeah. A lot going on with that dish. Yeah.
And the funny thing is with the, this barbecue theme, I'm like, I want to tie in a paper plate somehow.
And that's right. Oh, the presentation. Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the students, and he's like, man, I've got these plates that are, they're plastic, but they look exactly like paper plates. So I was like, well, bring one in. He brought it in. You know, it was all used. Kids use it. So I was like, well, I want it a little bit larger. His was 9-inch. So I found these 11-inch melamine. It looked exactly like a paper plate. So I plated on that. And then the underliner was cedar wood with, you know, kind of a picnic table look. And then that was brought out to the judges. And some of them told me that when they saw it, they were cutting with the knife, and they were afraid to actually cut through the bottom because it looked real. That was pretty sweet. I was happy with that.
So you had a cool presentation, an interesting plate, you know, some cool juxtapositions of ingredients. Now, what happens now that you've won? You get kind of a nice prize with this, right?
There's the night of, they gave me a Mac knife, which is pretty sweet. And then now I go to Napa, Greystone, the CIA. They'll have chefs flown in, you know, who are people know. I remember the first time I won, that was the first year they did this, which before it was a competition. People would go to Baltimore or San Diego and then, you know, take everything and compete. So it was a little bit of a, you know, stress, actually quite a bit of stress. They wanted to make it where it was enjoyable for everyone who won in the States. But the first year I went, I didn't know Chris Lilly, but he's really the barbecue king, 9-time world champion. Like I said, I tried to research the chefs before I went, but I was way too busy. So I was walking. We got there. We really didn't know anyone, so we were walking to get burgers, and I was just talking to Chris Lilly. Again, had no idea who he was, and I was asking him, like, sophomore questions about barbecue just to see if he'd ever done it. And I was like, have you ever brined your pork? And, But he was totally legit with his answer. He's like, yeah, oh, yeah, we do. You know, sometimes we do that. But, like, he didn't make me think, like, yeah, jerk. You know what? Nine-time world champion. So that was pretty sweet.
Well, now, since we're talking about barbecue, tell me a little bit about your, you know, your work in barbecue. I think that's interesting. I, you know, got certified as a KCBS judge one time, you know, so I'm kind of interested in it. So tell me about barbecue.
So you say you were certified? Uh-huh. Yeah, I got certified a few years ago as a judge because a buddy of mine, we would go into this thinking that we know how to cook, right? Thinking that we knew how to manipulate the fire, and I believe we didn't do a KCF full event. The first one, it was somewhere in South Bend. It was ribs only. Out of 32, I think we came in 32nd, dead last.
Oh,
like,
no.
It was so humiliating, and you're kind of like, well, maybe I don't know it about barbecue. So we went through this learning, and the best I've gotten, I've placed, let's see, I think 6th in chicken, 8th in pork, 11th in ribs. So I've gotten a lot better.
Well, we've been talking with Chef Lucas Trinosky of the Chef's Academy and also of High Five Lunch, a new food trailer that we'll hear more about later in today's show. So stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis, eskenazihealth.edu. So we are talking today about combinations on the local food scene. And we've heard how one local chef combined barbecue in an elegant pork dish to win this past week's Taste of Elegance Chef competition at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. Chef Lucas Trinosky of the Chef's Academy does compete each year in barbecue competitions, but this year he'll also be launching a food truck, one that focuses on meatballs.
Do you like it? Do you have a big barbecue rig and everything?
When I first started, I kind of went with what my buddy had. Then he got busy with other stuff, and I was like, I'll still do it. I put a hitch on my BMW. I had an older BMW. I would rent a U-Haul utility trailer, and I would throw my stuff in there, and they would see me coming. They would just start laughing. They respected me, but yeah, I didn't have, like, all these guys are in thousands of dollar RVs and pulling up these legit, like, they own barbecue joints. It's, yeah, they take it serious, which they should. There's me just trying to fit in.
Tell me about the food truck.
It's small. It's, you know, it's a pull behind, I guess, food trailer or whatever, concession trailer. But I bought one when I was in Ohio 10 years ago, but it was a super fixer-upper, and I'm not that guy. So I had it for a few years in my mom's backyard, and she pretty much every time she'd go outside, she'd be like, when's he getting this out of there? So that one, that dream kind of crashed, but it was always sticking in there. So when I saw all these food trucks, I was like, maybe it's my time now, you know? So I bought one, and I'm going to start. It's going to be super seasonal, so the menu is always going to change, and that's really my personality. To be doing the exact same thing for a long time is not appealing to me. So it's going to be super seasonal. I'm thinking right now, and I almost hate looking like I'm trying to copy, but the two meatball shops that are going to be on Mass Ave, I'm going to do some meatballs, but really different ones. You know, I've got a Chipotle meatball, a Caribbean jerk meatball. So it'll have all these kind of ethnic flavors. I've got a mufalata meatball. So all these different types, and then on the bottom will be you know, some sort of starch. There'll be a sauce, and then usually like a salad on top. But yeah, it's going to be a blast.
So now, when does that start?
Early spring, yeah, last week of April or March or so, maybe the first week of April. Right now, I'm in school, so I'm taking 3 classes online at Johnson & Wales.
Oh my gosh!
So I'll be done in May. Pretty soon.
So what kind of classes does a chef take? What are you taking?
Well, right now I'm taking hospitality law, sociology, and psychology. But before it was, you know, all kind of beverage classes. It was, what did I take? I feel like all kinds of stuff. It's all kind of just mushed in my head. I've been doing it for 2 years now, so I'm almost done for the bachelor's.
Well, all right. Yeah. So why were you interested in doing a food truck?
Well, I lived in Cincinnati, and a Swiss dude and myself opened a pizza joint. He had a bakery, and we opened a pizza joint right beside, and it's still open, John Paul's Paradiso. But then I moved back to my hometown. I've got two daughters there, and I was like, well, let me try to live here, but it's a super small place in Ohio. I was there 2 years, and I wanted to cook, right? But there's a lot of mostly fast food there. There's not a huge opportunity to do what I want. So I got the food truck so I could set up somewhere and do what I want. So it didn't work out there, but I've always had that want, I guess. And I need, you know, I go back every other weekend to Ohio for the girls. So I need, you know, not too many restaurants. You're going to be fine with the chef taking off every other weekend. That's why the teaching job, you know, weekends off, worked out perfectly. So this has been excellent. I've been here for almost 9 years. But the food truck is just, I want to cook again. I say here I don't cook, I demo. It's completely different. But I want to cook again a little bit.
Oh, I think that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, how fun. So I think people will be, you know, anxious to try it. So where will you, when you do get going in later in the spring, where can people expect to see you? Events or lunch times or what?
Possibly all of the above right now. It's one of those things that just kind of it works itself out, I think. I know Matt of Scratch Truck. We've been talking quite a bit. I go up to Andy's Kitchen for the, you know, prepping. I've been out a few times. I know, you know, Bobby with Citizen Hash. But so I'm just talking to those guys and seeing what they think works. I don't know, the breweries, they have food trucks out there quite a bit, and I don't know, I'll just kind of shoot, and sometimes I'll hit, and sometimes I'll miss.
So now tell me, where do you have a Facebook page about it? Can people, follow your Facebook page? Where can they find out more information about it?
Yeah, actually, I've started a series of videos. There's a couple sites I have. CulinaryRogue.com, that's kind of the videos. And then highfivelunch.com. There's a Facebook, the Culinary Rogue, but there's no High Five Lunch Facebook yet. I just didn't want to get 1,000 things out there. But, yeah, there is a High Five Lunch, which will I'm trying to put the spin on the videos as well. I like doing that. But then, you know, it'll have, you know, possibly recipes or the menus coming up. So you can see that. And actually on there is kind of a tentative menu. There's 12 or 15 different meatballs on there. Of course, I'll have maybe two meatballs that are constant and one changing. I'm not going to have a gargantuan menu. Small, but I'll do it right.
We've been talking with Chef Lucas Trinosky of the Chef's Academy and of High Five Lunch. For more information on the new food truck, which will hit the streets this spring, look for High Five Lunch on Facebook. We have heard this week about so many cool things happening around Indianapolis, but there's one thing coming up that we just can't overlook. Valentine's Day. Not to put any pressure on anybody, but the holiday is only a week away, and if you want a reservation at a favorite restaurant, you'd better get around to making it. One former restaurant host recalls talking to a certain former governor who called on February 13th and having to tell him that no, they didn't have a table available on Valentine's Day, even for the governor. So, by all means, if there's a restaurant you have your eye on, call now. Many have special Valentine's Day menus. Some that sound appealing to me include Cerulean in downtown Indianapolis, The Loft Restaurant at Trader's Point Creamery, Oakley's Bistro on the north side,
and Cobblestone Grill in Zionsville, which is doing Chateaubriand for two, carved tableside. Local chefs such as John Adams and Eli Anderson and Josh Horrigan are doing special Valentine's Day dinners as well. And, of course, there's always the option for dining in. And even if you aren't particularly handy in the kitchen, there are plenty of ways to pull off a Valentine's dinner at home. Local chef Regina Mihalik, for example, has a variety of grab-and-go items in the refrigerated case at her new Art2Go market at 11th and College, with a little shopping advice and some judicious choices of packaged and prepared goods. You could even put together a Valentine's meal that would involve little to no cooking. But you definitely will need dessert, so unless you're going to try something on your own, picking up a few treats from someplace like Circle City Sweets, Chocolate for the Spirit, the Cake Bake Shop, or the best chocolate in town just might be the easiest route. Just add wine and maybe some flowers and candles, and you've got a Valentine's Day dinner worth remembering. Otherwise, well, don't forget that reservation. You've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. I'd like to thank our guests today on Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio, Lisa Marino-Moyer of Scouts Treats, Bark Truck, and Griner's Sub Shop, Chef Lucas Trinosky of the Chef's Academy and High Five Lunch, and Ashley Brooks of Slow Food Indy. And thanks to John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio.
Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care, with a focus on patient-centered care. Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.